Hi everyone, welcome to the podcast from the Future of Cooling program of Oxford Martin School. I'm a fellow at the Oxford Martin School. My name is Nicole Miranda. I'm looking into the socio-technical aspects of sustainable cooling. We are researching active and passive technologies and how more demand will come on them as global warming heats up the planet. Interested in expanding the solution space from our conventional air conditioners to other ways of cooling, from shading to ponds on roofs to radiated panels, etc., even having ice cream. In today's series, Professor Radhika Khosla, who is the principal investigator of the Future of Cooling program. She is a professor at the Smith School of Enterprise and Environment and at the School of Geography. And she's the research director of the Oxford India Center for Sustainable Development. She has extensive experience in energy, climate change, and development and policy. Apart from the Future of Cooling theme, she has also led the Climate Works Foundation project on climate-friendly and socioeconomically productive coal change. Radhika is a contributing author to the sixth assessment report of the Intergovernmental Panel of Climate Change, IPCC, and the United Nations Environmental Programme, the UNEP, Emission Gas Report. Her other academic affiliations are with MIT and the University of Pennsylvania in the US and the Center of Policy Research in India. She has been staff scientist at the Natural Resource Defense Council in New York, where she helped set up the organization's work on clean energy and climate change in India and led research and implementation on building energy policies in Indian states. She serves on government policy committees and boards of journals and book presses. Welcome, Radhika.
Thank you so much, Nicole.
So first of all, we'd like to know more about your experience on cooling. On the personal side, what is your connection to cooling and why did you decide to research this topic?
It's actually, it's kind of an easy answer. It's because I spent too much time in places that were too hot. But what was striking for me has been that, so many parts of the world are, they're beset with such extreme heat. And yet in many other parts of the world, including in the UK and for us here in Oxford, we don't think about that as something that, that one has to grapple with on an everyday basis. And we don't fully appreciate as a result the energy implications, but also like the everyday lifestyle implications and the challenges that come from living with extreme heat. So I think as we move towards a world where, there's increased frequency and intensity of heat waves, this just seems like a really urgent issue for us to examine.
Absolutely. And talking about the big issues and challenging, let's dive into those questions. We've seen figures from the IEA, the International Energy Agency, saying that in the next 30 years, 10 air conditioners will be sold every second. What consequences will this have? Is that a bad thing? Could you explain that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a shocking number, right? 10 new air conditioners, an equivalent of 10 new air conditioners every second for the next 30 years. It's both a good and a bad thing. It's a good thing because it means that a lot more people are going to have access to technologies that will keep them cool, and that will be providing them with a form of thermal comfort that is necessary for well-being. It's a bad thing because of two main reasons. One, it is air conditioners are increasingly environmentally damaging in the current form with which they are operating, both because they use mainly energy intensive and fossil fuel based, often in most countries, electricity. But the magnitude of this electricity use is extremely high. What's worse is that air conditioners also have refrigerant gases that, again, are greenhouse gases. And so as a result, you have the use of air conditioners leading to the release of more greenhouse gases that leads to a further release or a further warming of the planet and the need for more air conditioning. So there's this negative feedback loop that is very problematic. The second reason why, you know, it's this IEA statistic is alarming is that in spite of the really large increase, other studies tell us that the gap of access to air conditioners is anywhere between 2 to 4 billion people in 2050, which means that even though, you know, there is such a large exponential rise in air conditioning that is impending, 2 to 4 billion people will not have access to this technology. And as a result, for them, cooling and the provision of thermal comfort for well-being is going to continue to remain a challenge.
Absolutely, yeah. And on air conditioning, do you see them as part of the solution, or are they on their way out?
Well, I think that, you know, we don't really have a mainstream technology that can replace air conditioners at the moment. So I do think that we are locked into vapor compression air conditioning, which is not great because there are many alternatives. And these alternatives have often existed for a long time in the form of passive cooling techniques through shading, ventilation, heat modulation, dissipation, or through vernacular architecture, which uses local ways and resources of, you know, of putting together and assembling buildings and inhabited spaces, but also through other mechanisms like lifestyles that and cultures around cooling that allow us to stay cool. Now, all of these are probably, they are not going to be enough when we're looking at extremely high temperatures in the 40s and even 50s now. But it is much more the case of using a portfolio of options that focus on passive approaches first, and then that, and therefore really reduce the demand for air conditioning that I see as a way forward. And then of course the technology itself also has large scope to get a lot more efficient, to use much better refrigerants, and then to have a grid that supplies the energy to these air conditioners that is decarbonized.
Right. So yeah, we can see that the grid actually is going to be really affected by all these air conditioners.
Mm-hmm.
They're growing demand. Yeah. You mentioned previously about the F gases and how they are a big challenge, and that because they're used in this locked technology. Why are they such a big challenge in the world of greenhouse gases and emissions?
So refrigerant gases that are used in the vapor compression technology that is, you know, the air conditioner in most homes, are short-lived gases, and they are greenhouse gases, and they have very high global warming potential, which means that when these gases are released into the atmosphere, which often happens during operations of the air conditioner, you know, caused maybe by leakage, or at the end of life of an air conditioner, you know, at the disposal stage, these gases are have a global warming potential that is tens of thousands of times higher than that of CO2, and therefore can cause a very sharp increase in warming in the near term. So they have lifespans of about, you know, less than 20 years, but within that time frame, they have the ability to cause a very high rate of warming, and therefore are compound the impact of, you know, that the negative impact that air conditioning has, particularly on climate change.
Thanks, Radhika. Apart from the energy and emission challenges of air conditioners and their refrigerants, in the program, we have recently published in Nature Sustainability the relationship of cooling and the Sustainable Development Goals. Could you give us some examples of the links between cooling and the SDGs?
It was very fun because it uncovered all of these interesting things about the relationship between cooling and sustainable development. One interesting fact was that the word cooling, cold, refrigerator, freeze, none of these feature in any of the 17 goals or their 169 targets. And yet, you know, if we look at the relationship between the provision of cooling and achieving the goals, we actually find evidence of cooling being related to the achievement of each of the different 17 sustainable development goals. So for instance, you know, some of the most obvious ones are climate action, because we know that cooling drives large increases in greenhouse gas emissions, and because of F-gases that are a key byproduct of refrigeration. Another one is affordable and clean energy, so sustainable development goal number 7. And we know that active space cooling technologies have very large electricity demand. Another example of you know, how cooling is tied to a different kind of goal is that of quality education. And studies show us how cognitive facilities are, cognitive faculties are impaired by extreme temperatures, and heat has a negative impact on productivity and learning outcomes, which can be mitigated by cooling. So another sustainable development goal is goal number 3 on good health and well-being. And here cooling is once again central. It reduces the health burden of severe exposure to heat, especially with the climate change impacts of rising temperatures. And we know more recently that cooling is essential for vaccine delivery. And so again, you know, the relationship between cooling and good health and well-being is very important. And a last example is the sustainable development goal of zero hunger. And we know again that cooling plays a really important role in enabling food production and delivery via the cold chain, as well as cooling techniques that support food production in greenhouses.
Absolutely. And on that vaccine, which is definitely a theme that we have been struggling at and globally, cooling has a really important part to play. Thanks for that, Radhika. So regarding the team at the Future of Cooling program, how are we organized to tackle the big challenge of cooling?
So the team is organized around different dimensions of cooling, which we consider to be a socio-technical system. You know, there's a really good sort of work stream around technologies and the role that both active and passive cooling technologies can play in this future trajectory. There's, and most of, you know, most of this sits in engineering. There's also the a work stream around understanding cooling cultures, lifestyles, and that is, you know, we have geographers who are addressing this question. Then we have a whole work stream on understanding the relationship between extreme heat and health, and particularly the impact of morbidity and extreme heat. So not just mortality, but actually examining the different ways in which heat affects human health. And that is with our colleagues in the Department of Public Health. And then also there's a stream of work around understanding the global production network of cooling. So, you know, where are cooling technologies mainly made? Where do they end up? What is the sort of life cycle of that larger industrial process? And where can value be gained and lost within it? So again, sort of colleagues, mainly more economic geographers, I'd say, are looking at that question. So as you can see, it's, you know, it moves from very technical to very social. But the key part is that, you know, we're all always in conversation with each other, which makes it a very sort of systematic and systems way of looking at this issue.
Great, thank you. And about the team, it's very interdisciplinary. It's very exciting to be part of it myself as well. I wanted to gather from you, what do you consider are the main impacts that, and outputs that we've had so far as a team?
I think what we can say credibly is that, you know, we are putting out, in a way, building the field around cooling to the extent that whether these are publications in sort of very quantitative technological terms or very sort of qualitative, what we're doing is really helping understand what comprises the cooling system and how its trajectory can be shaped. And I think that's reflected in our, you know, in our Nature Sustainability publication, and the fact that it was on the cover is something we're all so pleased about, but also in the way that we are able to then inform more of the public discourse around cooling, whether it is by being, you know, in the media or in on television at times, and also sort of informing public policy. So, you know, we've had various interactions with policymakers who are thinking through these questions, and our ability to be able to share, you know, the work that we're doing with them is helpful in informing impact.
Cool. Could you give us a couple examples of how our flagship framework could be applied by a person?
Yeah, so the framework, you know, has two, three key components. One is that it considers cooling at different stages. So it doesn't think of cooling as sort of a one, as a one piece item. Actually, it divides it up into the raw materials that comprise it, the assemblage of these materials, you know, that sort of when things are put together, the activities around which this, you know, cooling technologies, active or passive, are used, and then the end of life of that particular form of providing cooling. And then what it argues for is to say that there are five different levers of change that act on each of these four different stages of cooling. And those five levers of change are technologies, governance and policy, human behavior and lifestyles, business models, and then infrastructure itself, because we know that infrastructure actually shapes the solution space. And then you can look at the different intersections between these five levers and the four stages of cooling. And what you have is a number of different points, intervention points, where we can engage with and find ways to actually change the system towards sustainability. So an example could be, say, the policy lever acting on the end of life stage, where regulations around end of life disposal are of cooling equipments are put in place and actually implemented, because we know that at this point, the circular economy of cooling is quite unexamined, and there is a lot of leakage and disposal that takes place within the system, including illegal trading often of refrigerant gases.
So moving on to the future of cooling, which is not only the name of our program, but also a vision that we want to share. For a more tactical immediate future, Radhika, could you tell perhaps cooling investors that are listening to this podcast, what are the next three big things that need researching and financing within cooling?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I'd say that one of the first things is for us to think about cooling technologies, how we measure them, how we, you know, sort of think about standardizing technologies in a way where cooling is considered as more than just temperature. So moving beyond temperature as the exclusive way in which to measure cooling, but rather to consider all different comfort variables, whether that is humidity, radiant temperature, air velocity, and therefore, you know, sort of examining products that are both energy intensive in cooling and otherwise as a function of more than just temperature. The second thing I'd say is that, you know, really investing in finding ways to scale passive cooling technologies is really important, because like we were talking about before, where, you know, air conditioning is extremely energy intensive, it's environmentally damaging, and it is often just unaffordable. So while it is really important for being able to provide thermal comfort in regions of extreme heat, it isn't going to be enough to serve everyone. And therefore, what we need is to have at scale other forms of cooling that are not as energy intensive. And there is a whole sort of literature and history of passive cooling technologies that allow temperatures, you know, extremes to be reduced and the need for mechanical cooling to be reduced. And therefore, investing in passive cooling technologies at scale would be, you know, a second point. And then the third thing I'd say is that, you know, extreme heat is here to stay. And it's really important that societies, vulnerable communities, and individuals all are equipped with a way of learning to live with it. So understanding the implications of that at the urban level is also quite important, because cities are much warmer than their surroundings already. So for instance, some of the work that we're doing around this is to examine the number of cooling degree days and how those are going to change and increase as global temperatures rise. But essentially, understanding where the hotspots of extreme heat are going to be, and then thinking through the practical ways and means by which, you know, one can learn to live with that kind of extreme heat in a manner that is not damaging to the well-being, the lives and livelihoods of the people who are inhabiting these regions. And I'd say all of this ties in also with the goal of the program, which is not just to understand the future of cooling, but also help shape it.
Fantastic. Thank you, Radhika. So in a nutshell, we need to consider that cooling is more than just temperature. We need to scale up passive technologies, and we need to also learn to live with extreme heat. What would you see as a more strategic point of view? Like, if we achieve cooling in a sustainable way, how would you see yourself walking through a hot city that has a sustainable cooling strategy? What would it look, how would it look different, your walk, than today?
Well, I can think of, you know, some simple things. One is the use of a lot more smart surfaces. So a smart surface, as we consider it, is one that is, you know, that has high reflectivity. So it doesn't really absorb that much heat. And it can also have evaporative cooling as part of it. So sort of, you know, green surfaces. So I think, you know, a sustainable cooling based walk would involve being on smart surfaces, having shading overhead above pedestrian areas, and then also just being close to both water and green bodies. So ensuring that, you know, there is enough of all of that to be able to provide some respite from the heat.
Absolutely, yes. And we already see that in certain neighborhoods with lots of cement, for example, the urban heat island gets exacerbated. And super. Thanks for taking us through a walk through a sustainable cool city of the future. So apart from passive and active measures that we'll be able to see in our cities, do you think that people's mentality should change towards cooling?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, technologies don't operate in isolation. It's about the choices we make about how to use a technology that really changes energy demand and is of, you know, a factor contributing to climate change. And so lifestyles have a huge role to play. I mean, we know lifestyle emissions are almost 2/3 of all emissions. So with regards to cooling, it's really important to be able to be aware of how damaging using the air conditioner is. I think delinking some of the more kind of early ways in which air conditioning came about, where the use of an air conditioner was tied to ideas of modernism and progress and status, I think delinking that and sort of seeing it for its environmental reality is, you know, is helpful. It's very difficult to do, particularly in sort of, you know, emerging hot parts of the world. But also, you know, constantly making that choice about using passive, non-mechanical cooling-based forms first, before switching to an energy-intensive air conditioning mode, can be really, really useful. Sometimes it's very simple. It's just about having ventilation and, you know, sort of covering one's sort of body so that you don't get burnt, but and having shade. All of this changes depending on where one is and how hot it is, but there is always the choice to be able to use passive first.
Well, thank you, Radhika. This is certainly a challenging yet necessary vision we need to achieve to decarbonize cooling. We want to thank you for explaining the challenges and solutions in the sector and presenting our Oxford Martin School team to the world through this podcast. We've reached the end of our podcast, but looking forward to discussing other issues related to cooling through these channels. Please subscribe to our Future of Cooling newsletter and on our website. And thanks again, Radhika, and to you listeners. Bye.
Bye.